freed in return for Israel announcing a three-day ceasefire in Gaza. Qatar's been acting as a mediator between the two sides. Its foreign minister, Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani, says minor details have to be finalised.
I'm now more confident that we are close enough to reach a deal that can bring the people safely back to their homes, whether they are the hostages on Hamas side or whatever the exchange that will happen will take place from the Israeli side.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights says recent killings at schools turned shelters and scenes of people fleeing Gaza's biggest hospital beggar belief. 31 very sick babies are on their way to Egypt after being moved out of the neonatal unit at Al-Shifa. Flights are being disrupted at Heathrow this afternoon. Air traffic restrictions are in place because of shortage of staff and strong winds. The Chancellor hasn't ruled out a reduction in inheritance tax in his autumn statement on Wednesday, saying that everything is on the table. But Jeremy Hunt's Labour shadow, Rachel Reeves, has suggested that would be a bit odd.
Let's see what they do. But we are in the middle of a massive cost of living crisis. And cutting inheritance tax, which benefits less than 4% of estates each year, that seems an unusual way to tackle the scale of the cost of living crisis that we have right now.
Mr. Hunt's revealed he won't introduce any tax cuts for fuel inflation. Australia have won the Cricket World Cup for a record-extending sixth time with a sixth wicket victory over India in a tense final. They bowled out the tournament host for 240 with three dismissals for Mitchell Starc at the Narendra Modi Stadium in Ahmedabad. And a hat worn by Napoleon during his reign as Emperor of France has been sold for nearly 2 million euros. It was originally valued between 6 and 800,000 euros. It's become the most expensive hat ever sold at auction. That's the latest from Sky News. I'm Chris Milligan.
This is Phoenix FM.
Weather on Phoenix FM, proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
This evening, showers will slowly ease through the evening with good clear spells developing overnight. Temperatures holding up through a moderate breeze, continuing much of the night. Minimum temperature will be 6 degrees Celsius. Tomorrow will be dry with sunny spells for much of the morning, becoming mostly cloudy with a few passing showers throughout the afternoon. Another fairly mild day with lighter winds. Maximum temperature tomorrow is 12 degrees Celsius, and that is your weather.
Weather on Phoenix FM, sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company, proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit sehbac.com for help with your home.
On 98 FM and online, this is Phoenix FM.
Hello and welcome to the arts programme here on Phoenix FM. Well, the lights are switched on and it is officially cold, although technically speaking it was quite warm today. Anyway, that can only mean one thing, it is Christmas!
Oh no, it isn't.
Oh yes, it is! It's going to be like that all for the next 2 hours.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Yes, it is. Yeah. No, it really is. I'm going to do lots of this.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, I am. Anyway, so today it's all about panto.
If you didn't get that clue.
Yeah, that was a bit of a hefty clue there, wasn't it? But yeah, we're going to talk about pantomimes, the origins of pantomimes, mm-hmm. the pantomimes you can go and see. Mm-hmm. But we're also going to talk about other things you can go and see that are very Christmassy. There's lots of light shows. Have you noticed? I don't know whether this is becoming a burgeoning thing, but there's lots of light shows going across
every
the region.
Every Christmas, more and more and more.
Yeah. So we're going to tell you about those, and we're going to have songs that I've chosen this week.
Yes.
It's a mix.
Claire's favourite songs to celebrate her birthday and upcoming trip away.
Yeah. So let's get on with the show.
I'm Natalie.
And I'm Claire, and this is the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM.
For I've imagined every bit of him, from his strong moral fiber, to the wisdom in his head, to the homey aroma of his pipe.
You have wished yourself a small town Galahad, the breakfast eating four button tie.
And I shall meet him when the time is ripe. I'll know when my love comes along. I won't take a chance. Oh, he'll be just what I need. Not some fly-by-night Broadway romance.
And you'll know at a glance by the two pair of pants.
I'll know by his calm, steady voice, those feet on the ground. I'll know as I run to his arms that at last I've come home safe and sound. Until then, I shall wait. Until then, I'll be strong. For I'll know when my love comes along.
Mine will come as a surprise to me. Mine, I leave to chance and chemistry.
Chemistry?
Yeah, chemistry. Suddenly I'll know when my love comes along. I'll know then and there. I'll know at the sight of her face. How I care, how I care, how I care. And I'll stop, and I'll stare. And I'll know long before we can speak. I'll know in my heart. I'll know, and I won't ever ask, am I right? Am I wise? Am I smart? But I'll stop and I'll stare at that face in the throng. Yes, I'll know when my love comes along.
That was absolutely glorious. If you didn't know who that was, I've just put my headphones on really weirdly, so I just need to take them off because I've just done a really weird thing with
You've
my ponytail.
You've got a bit of a Muppet hairstyle.
I've like, often been referred to as a Muppet.
The drums or something.
Yes, I've often been referred to as one of the Muppets. But that was Gene Simmons with I'll Know from the glorious Guys and Dolls. Hopefully you've seen that. It was with Frank Sinatra, Marlon Brando, who was singing with Gene Simmons then, and it won 3 Oscars as a film back in 1955. It's a musical with music and lyrics by Frank Lesser and book by Joe Swerling and Abe Burrows, and it's based on another book or a series of short stories called The Idyll of Miss Sarah Brown and Blood Pressure, and also 2 other short stories by Damon Runyon. It's one of my all-time favourite musicals. I was very much brought up on the film. And I don't know if you saw last year, the Bridge Theatre did a showcase, an incredible revival of this musical. And it's been so popular. I can't remember if it was last year or this year. I've just lost track of time. But it's come back because it was so... No, it was this year. I think it was earlier on in the spring and summer. And they've brought it back already because they couldn't... They just sold out so quickly. And it's on now. So I'm very much hoping to get there.
That is part of your birthday.
I don't know if I'm going to get there before Christmas, to be honest, because like, days are running out. But I think I might get there in the new year. But
how long is it on for?
It's definitely on until the end of January. In the new, in the run at the Bridge Theatre, we've got a number of amazing people who to look out for. Skye Masterson, which in the film is the Marlon Brando character, is played by George Leonardis. No, I can't say, can't speak today. Leonardis, who has appeared in theatre in Follies in Tangier, On Your Feet at the Curve, and the London Coliseum National Tour. He was in An Officer and a Gentleman at the Curve, and on its national tour. And he's done things like Annie and Mamma Mia in the West End. And he's really cool. So he's going to make the kind of suave bad boy turned good Skye Masterson. Yeah. Nathan Detroit, who we in the film is played by Frank Sinatra, is played by Daniel Mays, and you'll recognise Daniel Mays. He's in so many things. He's in film and TV, Magpie Murders, Inside Number 9. He was one of the characters in Line of Duty, he was one of the cops that was bad in Line of Duty. He's been in Dares and in Vera. So, like, just you'll know who he is as soon as you see a picture of him. Google him quickly. Yeah. But so he plays Nathan Detroit.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I know who you mean.
Sarah Brown, who in the film and in the play is the kind of Christian serving girl who's with the Salvation Army and falls in love with Skye Masterson. She's played by Celind Shoemaker, who was in Howard Goodall, who was the composer of many a theme tune for many British TV comedy. He composed Blackadder theme tune. He wrote Love Story, and she appeared in that in the Netherlands, and then made her West End debut as Fontaine in Les Miserables.
It's not an easy one to play.
So, and she was also Christine in Phantom of the Opera for a couple of years, including the 30th anniversary performance. So she's got huge musical theatre credentials. So she's playing Sarah Brown, which is the other kind of lead character. But yes, I'm really looking forward to going and seeing that. I think I've had the exciting thing about it is you can really choose what kind of experience you want to have watching this musical. You can either be sitting in a theatre watching a musical in a kind of traditional sense of sitting in a seat and watching something. But because the Bridge Theatre is in the round, so the stage is always, it can be proscenium, it can be at the kind of like everyone looking towards one end, but they mostly do things in the round. So they bring the stage into what's also the pit or the stalls. And so the set is essentially in the middle of the stalls, and you can stand and be part of the set. Some of it's raised.
Would you have to stand throughout the whole?
Yes, you would. But then you can move around, and actually I was looking some clips on YouTube, and like whenever the songs are up, everybody's dancing, you know, everybody's kind of like, you know, getting into the rhythm of it. And then as things move around, you can kind of move around. I mean, you can't move around too much because it does look like quite packed, but you can move around enough to dance, and you can move around enough to kind of shift your position. So I was like, do I stand and feel like I'm part of it, or do I sit
and just enjoy
the whole spectacle in front of me? Do I want to be more like, you know, Henry VIII sitting on his throne?
I'm just looking at some pictures again online. Yeah, lots of people dancing.
So I can't decide what to do, whether to stand and dance or whether to sit and hold court and watch what's happening.
I think it's a case of which one you would get more FOMO about. If you're sat down and watching people dancing, you're going to get massive FOMO about
Yeah, you
that,
are, but then you have to remember that, you know, turning 51 tomorrow, standing for
Claire.
I'm not sure. I don't know if I'd be standing thinking, oh my God, I wish I'd got a seat. Or if I'd be sitting thinking, oh, I should have stood. Why didn't I stand? That looks really fun.
But you do need to look at this picture, though.
I am leaning more towards sitting at the moment.
Guys and dolls.
Yes, I know.
All of these people dancing, and there's bright lights, and there's streamers, and they're all having so much fun standing.
I know, but they're all under 50. All the people standing are really young. So, I'm leaning on the just push the boat out a little bit and give it to myself for a Christmas present and sit on the first row so I can see. Because the other thing about standing is that when they bring the stage out, the stage is level with your eyesight. So you're always going to be looking up at them.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Do you go with a couple of other people? If anybody, get them some standing tickets, and then if you decide you want to go down and dance, yeah, just like swap over.
If anybody has seen Guys and Dolls at the Bridge Theatre, can you please tell me what to do? Should I stand or should I sit? Thank you very much.
And the line is open until 6 o'clock. We will only be answering questions based on whether you should stand or sit at the Bridge Theatre.
You can email us at theartsprogramme@phoenixfm.com, or you can get us on Twitter, X and Facebook on @programmearts. How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been good. I've had quite a cultural week, actually.
Oh, good.
I went to see a musical, but I didn't stand, but it was very
did
immersive.
You have the option?
No, I didn't have the option. I went to see Treason with Charlotte. So this was the play based on Guy Fawkes Night.
Yeah.
So that was opened last year and came back this year at Alexandra Palace.
Nice.
So we went all the way to Alexandra Palace, which was amazing. I've not been there before.
I used to live at the bottom of the hill.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I used to look at it every morning. I loved it. Loved living there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful building.
Yeah.
So Treason is obviously about Guy Fawkes. What I didn't expect was that actually it's Guy Fawkes that's telling the story, and the story isn't very much about Guy Fawkes at all.
Okay.
He kind of only features in it slightly. It was very London, which...
What does that mean?
Which doesn't sound... particularly strange, as it is a story.
Was Lily Allen singing
London.
In it or something?
No,
very
she could
London
have been.
Town.
No. She could have been.
She
and
should
I
have
expect
been.
She will make an appearance at some point. But you know, when you go and watch a musical, you don't really think about the accents. But actually, when I watched this musical,
unless you're watching My Fair
I
Lady,
I definitely thought, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. These aren't American accents. These are very London accents. And there was almost like some hip hop. There was some.
Okay.
Kind of the tones of voicing it was really quite unique. But anyway, it was amazing. The set was very, very good. There was a lot of kind of this bonfire night smoke that just kind of rolled across the audience constantly. But that was really cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Worth going to see. The only other musical that I can think of is My Fair Lady, where it's very London like, accents.
Yeah.
The rain in Spain.
This was kind of more East London.
Yeah, well, that's what she does, isn't she, in the... what was Pygmalion with the original play?
Yeah, I guess so.
Where she does the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plane.
You could imagine that Lily Allen and the Streets were there.
Yeah.
And a couple of others. But yeah,
so
all of the singing was very to the actors as well. You could see that they were comfortable singing in those voices as well, which is quite cool.
So worth the trek up to Ali Pali.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice.
I don't think it's on for that long. So you need to get your
tickets. But watch out for it. So it may come back. And you've also been judging the Havering Young Artist of the Year.
Yes.
This is nice.
Yeah, so this is something I do every year with another creative Natalie called Natalie Campbell, who is a mural artist in Havering. And the Havering Young Artist of the Year, it's been running since before I can remember, to be honest. Basically, it's a schools competition, and teachers from across schools submit the best in Key Stage 3 to Key Stage 5, and then there's a prize for the winner of each kind of category, and then an overall winner. So, yeah, we met on Wednesday at the Appleby Gallery in Francis Bardsley School, had a look at all of the artworks, and there were probably about 100 submitted.
Wow, that's
over
a good amount.
All of those. Yeah, so that was really nice. I couldn't tell you the people's names who won because we weren't privy to the names on the scores.
All right.
But
okay.
I can give you a description of the winner, which was this amazing, it was huge. It was probably about 3 metres wide by 1.5 metres tall.
Wow.
Key Stage 5, so that's A level.
Yeah.
Of some, it was really expressive as well, just some like really big black marks, which were kind of two heads of some Aborigines kind of knocking together. It's quite difficult to explain, but yeah, very beautiful.
Wow.
And there's a lot of portraiture. There are a lot of large works, which is quite unusual for that age bracket. There was some photography. So the person that placed first in the Key Stage 5 category had done this lovely kind of composed photograph of colonialised fruit, but in the style of a Dutch painting, which is very, very cool.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah. But
well,
yeah, I
really
mean,
cool.
It's amazing just to see young people's artwork as well and where they're kind of moving with it.
Yeah.
There were some letters that had been made out of clay that were kind of... How would you describe them? Kind of protest letters.
Right, okay. Placard letters.
Yeah, kind of, but they were actual letter envelopes. So there was there was an envelope where it was opened and you could see a forest fire inside. That was quite cool. Yeah. The concept's like really nice as well. So I think the teachers obviously teaching these modules of work are obviously putting in some really cool ideas as well.
It's interesting. I wonder whether there's more of the a kind of A-level GCSE artwork that's going to be influenced by climate change and people's views on that. And it's a real shame because Whittle College has just taught out their BA in environmental art.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they finished it this year. They're not teaching that anymore.
That's bizarre, isn't it? It seems quite timely. Yeah.
But, you know, not enough take-up.
Yeah, it's the first for it.
And so that sounds cool. And then, so of course, Honour Our Neighbour in Havering is going for the London Borough of Culture, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And we've not really mentioned it on the show yet.
No, we haven't much.
Mainly because I wasn't there for the first couple of meetings. So I didn't know much about it, but we've just come to the end of the writing of the proposal and all plans are kind of set, ready to submit in a couple of weeks' time. So
great.
It's very exciting. That's been led by David Shearing, who's obviously been on the show, who's now the chair of Queensfield
Hornchurch.
Yes,
because Sarah's now stepped back.
Yeah, which is very interesting. So he's been writing that along with Matthew, director of the Queensfield Hornchurch. And the submission...
And it's part of changing...
Havering changing. So the submission as a whole has been kind of put together by David Matthew and then a consortium that is Havering Changing, Creative Havering Health.
Okay.
Which is kind of a consortium member of consortium members, which are people like doctors, NHS practitioners, and artists and arts organisations. Mm-hmm. And then the third organisation that's been part of this is an organisation called Fuse, which is, again, a consortium of partners from youth services. So you've got some people that represent teachers from Havering. Yeah. Then there's a couple of youth charities, and then there's a couple of organisations that deal with kind of education. So there's a real broad network of representation. So obviously Havering Changing has kind of eight consortium members as well, which range from various people across Havering.
Yeah.
So.
And I suppose it gives you that opportunity, something like a London Borough of Culture, gives you that opportunity to bring all of those voices together for one kind of, you know, big vision for the borough, doesn't it? That's kind of the galvanising piece of it. It's really helpful. Because it would be, you know, it's such a rare thing to get those kinds of consortiums coming together and writing a big bid like that together.
Yeah, and the bid is huge. It's a Mayor of London kind of application, which is big enough in itself. But it's also for not just a lot of money from the Mayor of Havering, but a lot of outsourced pots of money as well. So you have a fund for the Liberty Festival, and then you have a fund for National Lottery Heritage. So there's kind of lots of different things that you need to consider, especially around youth and heritage, because these are also additional funds that would then go into it, and you need to look for partner funding elsewhere.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's quite huge. All in all, I think, so there's £1.35 million that would come from the Mayor of London into Havering specifically for this project. But on top of that, with the match funding, the year would see something like £4.8 million being spent in Havering on arts and culture.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Sounds great. If you are from Havering and you do want to back the bid, you can go to havering.london. Actually, no, it's haveringlondon.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can submit your interest in what you would like to see and say that you back the bid. And that would help in terms of when we do actually submit, the Mayor of London can go, oh, look at these thousands of people from Havering that actually want this to happen.
Yeah.
Very important if you want to back the bid.
And can you only do that if you live in Havering?
No, not necessarily.
Because, you know, if Havering wins, then actually it's a win for Essex as well, because the kind of relationship between Havering and Essex...
Jump on the Lizzie line.
It's just
come
a
hang
stop,
out.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just... And also, when you build capacity in a place like that and you invest in culture in that place, the neighbouring places really benefit from that, because you get lots more crossover of opportunities, of employment, of kind of creative people looking to expand their practice beyond perhaps where they started. So you get that kind of that whole sort of, you know, if you think about it as a sort of beating hub, what happens, the ripple effect of those things really affect kind of, you know, 50 or 200.
Even things like new artist studios, you know, if you're from Essex and you're looking for somewhere nearby, actually it might be closer to go to Romford than into Colchester, for example.
Yeah.
So, yeah, That's definitely true. So everyone that's listening,
everyone who's listening should back the bid.
Back the bid.
Fantastic. Well, I had a trip out as part of work, actually. I had a trip out to RHS Hyde Hall this week, which was very nice. Got a little back of house tour around the gardens and around some of the other spaces. So that was really cool. And it just reminded me, when you go to those places, how much closer you are to the environment, and that kind of inspirational moment. Like when I, when I've done a few meetings in a place called Snape Maltings in Alborough.
Snape Maltings.
Snape. Snape. Oh, Snape. Sorry, I was swallowing at the
same
time.
But that's also
Snape.
A cool name.
Snape. Snape Maltings. Maltings. Which is a huge venue, but it's also, so it plays a lot of live music, and it's got a really strong reputation around music and culture and health. And it's particularly for artists, it's kind of like, it's one of those kind of retreat sanctuary type places, but they also kind of really delve into an artist's practice, and they look at everything that's kind of physical, mental, playing styles, composition styles, creative styles. It's kind of, it's musicians plus, so it's not just but it's mostly performers, and they've got this real reputation for having that kind of retreat style approach to expanding someone's practice. And they've been going for years. I mean, they've been going for decades. And when you're there, because it's right in the middle of Suffolk, and it's right next to the kind of the Norfolk Broads and the rivers, those kind of, that kind of Norfolk Broad feeling, it's just beautiful. And when I was at RHS Hyde Hall, I was just kind of sitting outside the restaurant, like looking down this beautiful garden into the far distance, because it's got a little bit of a, when you get up to the top of their site, it's got a really nice view. And I was like, gosh, this is a really exciting place to come and be as an artist. So part of my thought was to go away and start to think about how I could influence to have some artists in residence properly in Hyde Hall, so that they were spending a really good quality of time there. Anyway, so that's just like
amusing.
And it was like, oh, I'll persuade them to do that. But it was just really cool to be there. And we'll come on to Hyde Hall later, because we're going to talk about light shows and things. But it was really great. And then the other thing I found in my Jane Austen obsessed world, because I am producing a big Jane Austen year-long festival of celebration of her birthday in 25, I found the latest thing this week, apart from the fact that I keep looking at all sorts of really odd Jane Austen merchandise, was I found another podcast. And this podcast is called The Thing About Austen. So if you are a big Austen fan, this is a podcast about Jane Austen's world, the people, objects and culture that shaped her fiction. And it's kind of got some historical context and also lots of literary jokes and shenanigans and things. But it also kind of, it sort of takes out what I was interested in, was it takes out really contemporary topics from her life and from her stories and her writing, and kind of debates them. And it's a little bit like, you know, what would Jane do if you took that topic out now and thought about it now. So I really
and I feel like that would be in the merchandise as well, a little bracelet that says what would Jane do?
Yeah.
And if it's not, that's something you can produce, Claire.
Yeah, totally.
Sorry. Nobody listened to that.
And then finally, I didn't have a huge amount of time, because I was doing, I was in Southampton this week and I was doing quite a lot of late nights. But to ease my way through one evening of finishing the advent calendar and the Christmas crochet, I watched Jack the Giant Slayer, which is a 2013 film.
I feel like I recognise this, but at the same time I don't. And it says here that Stanley Tucci is in it.
He is.
And how have I missed this?
I know. He's plays the baddie, of course. So Nicholas Holt, he plays Jack. Stanley Tucci, Ewan McGregor, Eleanor Tomlinson, Eddie Marson, Ian McShane.
So many people.
So many people. And this is obviously about Jack and the Beanstalk, so sent to market by his uncle to sell the horse, and Jack meets Princess Isabel, played by Eleanor Tomlinson, who he rescues from some ruffians, and he comes home obviously with just the bag of beans.
Like you do.
Like you do. Jack. Given to him by a monk who had stolen them, because he'd stolen them from somebody in the film who shouldn't have had them, kind of thing. And then of course
he took them into his care.
He took them back into his care, and of course, one of them got dropped, and therefore the beanstalk came back. So it's that whole kind of rescuing Isabella, but also rescuing the whole kingdom from the giants. But yeah, so it was, I was 6 out of 10 for me. It was kind of
was the golden goose in it.
The golden goose wasn't it? I saw a harp at one point. I didn't see a goose.
Oh, it's not a golden goose, is it? It's a goose that lays goose a golden egg.
Yes,
I think that's my favourite part of the Jack and the Beanstalk story. So if there's no goose,
no, there wasn't really a goose. Well, there was. There might have been. I wasn't looking out for it, to be honest, Natalie.
Okay, maybe I'll watch it.
Just
to see if Stanley Tucci comes back into the performance at any point.
He could have been meaner.
As the goose.
He could have been meaner.
He could have been.
He could have been meaner. It's not as good as The Princess Bride. I'm laying that one out there.
Okay, well, that's my favourite film of all time.
Yeah, so it's nowhere near as good as that.
I mean, nothing's going to be as good as that.
No. Anyway, right, let's get into some music, because look, we're galloping through time.
Oh, nice.
I did my first one. So this is Yola, and I have seen her live 3 times now, I think. I absolutely love her. This piece reminds me of 1950s and 60s musicals and movies. It reminds me of Burt Bacharach. It reminds me of all sorts of things, and it feels like a great big hug of a chocolate mug of caramel kind of song. I just love it. I absolutely love it. So let's have Yola with Faraway Look.
Is slow broadband cramping your style? Don't buffer in silence. Join BeFibre today and experience reliable, full fibre broadband. Enjoy a seamless, free installation and access to our UK-based customer service team. This is what streams are made of. This is broadband as it should be. This is BeFibre. Upgrade your world today at b-fibre.co.uk.
Are you hungry? Then why not try an award-winning Indian takeaway from Hut & Spice? All our meals are cooked to order using the freshest ingredients, bringing you the finest traditional Indian dishes. To order, visit our website at www.hutandspice.com or give us a call on Brentwood 226 124 and see why we're the favourite choice of customers across Brentwood to Billericay.
The all-new Players Lounge has got everything you need for the perfect night out, with two bars, a restaurant and the best sound and lighting system in Essex. With regular special events and guest DJs, you're always guaranteed a brilliant night at Players. On the 5th of February, it's top DJ Roman Kemp. And on the 12th of February, it's the Stars of House with Marcus Dryden, Mickey Star Lewis and Daryl Privet. Check us out and book now at players-lounge.co.uk.
At The Mortgage Specialists, we offer whole-of-market mortgage advice. We pride ourselves on keeping things personal, ensuring the advice you receive is perfect for your situation. With over 25 years' experience, we offer our clients clear, independent advice delivered in a professional way. Whether you're moving, looking to renew your mortgage, or maybe looking to invest in buy-to-let, call us now on Brentwood 222932 to speak with us today. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage.
Phoenix FM.
Smoke that bag that you just stole. When you're there.
ready for you yet. That was Joel Saracula with Northern Soul. And so, Joel.
Sorry, I just love the fact that Ken just like crept in there. Is he not Ken up for you?
No, he creeps in all the time. I've stuck him like permanently in our playlist. So Joel Saracula, I came across when I worked at Help Musicians, and he applied for some funding, and I gave him some support when he was doing that, and he came on. I think I saw him at Great Escape originally. I can't remember where I met him first, but I really liked his. I saw him do live first, and I really liked. He had such this great energy, really kind of 70s vibe, and just and this kind of Northern Soul 60s vibe, and just really, really loved it. And just a really genuinely lovely person as well. Really, really nice guy. His music's just stuck with me. I've just kind of carried on really, really enjoying it. And he spends most of his time touring around Central Europe because he's got quite a big fan base in Spain and Italy and Germany, and he's doing really well. But if you do get a chance to catch Joel Saracula and you like that, then do go and see him live because he's brilliant live. But he's got a couple of albums on streaming services, so
interesting buy he's his got music. That presence in Southern Europe, though.
I don't know what happened. I don't know why that particularly came out, but he just keeps going back there because he gets loads of tours over there. So he's making touring
it's
work.
Nice. It's so good. And if you get to tour in these sunny places as well, that's even better, right?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, big shout out to Joel. He's an amazing person, and I'll send him a link to listen to the show afterwards. That was my third favourite track of the show. But we are talking pantomimes, aren't we? And you've been going back in time.
Yes.
To look at all where pantomimes come from.
Yes.
Why on earth do we have these things?
And so first of all, I went back to the V&A website.
Did you? Oh, yes. Nice. Very helpful website. First of all, can I ask you, are you a pantomime goer?
I do not regularly go to pantomimes, no. I don't have any children. I think that's probably the first point. But we used to go regularly when I was a child, and I used to really enjoy it. And I quite like the idea of these pantomimes that they have like an adult version that you can go and see without the kids.
Right.
And we'll mention one of those later. The Thameside Theatre have a showing of their pantomime, which is over 16s, I think.
Is it
a bit more tongue-in-cheek?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you have 5 minutes to tell us, not even 5 minutes actually, to tell us about pantomimes and where they came from, starting now.
I'm gonna start from the top. Outlandish costumes, broad comedy, celebrity turns, and audience participation. The now familiar trappings of classic British panto owe much to the enterprising Victorians whose innovation cemented the popular art form that we know and love today. I'm just going to quickly run through some of my favourite things about pantomimes, starting from the beginning. So the first pantomimes actually have their roots in Commedia dell'arte, which is 16th century Italian entertainment, which used dance, music, tumbling, acrobatics, and featured a cast of mischievous stock characters. A bit circus-esque.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the 1800s where pantomimes really kicked off in the UK. So there was a pantomime which was around the 18th century in London called Harlequin. This was very popular because it used language, but then at some point language was banned in the UK for various political reasons in theatre. So
I think only
certain theatres were allowed to use language that were signed off by the king or the queen or whatever. So in 1843, theatre licensing had restricted spoken word in performances. And the Theatres Act... So, it was 1843 that the Act was lifted.
Mm-hmm.
So this allowed theatre without a royal patent to produce a play with purely spoken dialogue. So now witty puns, wordplay and audience participation were re-added to the repertoire of mime, daring chase scenes and spectacular transformations. So that had fairy tale characters, etc., etc., very much like the pantomime you would imagine now. So pantomimes at Christmas, why do we have them at Christmas? So by the late 19th century, most of the extravagant productions in London could last up to 5 hours. So very long time for a performance.
Can I also just tell you something about going to the theatre in pre-Victorian times, even earlier than that?
Mm-hmm.
Georgian and other times where plays and things lasted 5 hours, long time.
Yeah, imagine standing in the pit for that, Claire.
Oh, imagine.
But if you were of the nobility or had servants, then your servants would scurry into the stalls or scurry into the seats behind you and put a chamber pot underneath your bottom.
Oh, delightful.
Yeah.
And that was probably the subject of pantomimes.
Once you were in, you were in. You
couldn't leave. Time.
But the theatres were absolutely disgusting places to go. And you'd just be kind of, you know, they were like just a bench and it would be open underneath. So, you know, people would be collecting the stuff underneath and just whatever else was falling on other people. I mean, just horrible. Anyway, I digress away from your lovely Christmas story.
Pantomimes at Christmas, Claire. So you've had your Christmas dinner. Your chambermaid's right next to you.
Yes.
You're in the stands for 5 hours. So it became customary for pantomimes to open on Boxing Day, forever linking this entertainment with Christmas and family. So obviously the time was there for Boxing Day for people to go and watch some theatre for 5 hours.
Yeah.
So where did some of these pantomime stories come from? So all over the place, basically. But today's popular pantomime stories derive from places like Dick Whittington, which was based on the life of a real mayor of London. We're hoping that there will be plays in the future about Sadiq Khan, Boris Johnson, all of these
people. Let's not hope for Boris Johnson.
Pantomimes of them all.
Yeah. Well, you know,
Ken Livingstone.
There is a role for, let's face it, there's a role for Boris Johnson in a pantomime, isn't there?
They're
don't inclusive pantomimes. That's one thing you're saying about them.
Yeah. So this mayor died in 1423. There wasn't any evidence that he ever owned a cat. Other stories derived from European, Middle Eastern and Asian folk tales and legends and fairy tales published in 17th century French writers, Madame de Alony and Charles Perrault, including Goldilocks, Cunning Cinders, Little Red Riding Hood, Puss in Boots, etc. It was deemed the most cutting-edge theatre, and I'm saying this on the basis that Rossini's 1817 opera La Cenerentola. I can't say that. La
Cenerentola.
Cenerentola, yeah. Based on Cinderella, had its London premiere in 1820 and appeared at Covent Garden the same year as Harlequin and Cinderella or The Little Gloss Slipper did. So you had opera and pantomime, same story, side by side. In 1820. So obviously in pantomime you do have pantomime dames. You also used to have principal boys as well, not so common nowadays, but this theatrical device of gender switching became a mainstay of Victorian pantomime as early as 1837, when actor manager Lucy Eliza Vistris played a breeches role in a production of Puss in Boots at the Olympic Theatre, whereas Vistris played Ralph while her husband Charles Matthews played the cat.
Nice.
So men, however, had played women's roles throughout history in theatre, as female performance were banned from stage until the Restoration. Pantomime drew on this convention. And then just on that, Samuel Simmons played Mother Goose as early as 1806. Mm-hmm. So some of the characters that we have today have always kind of been in existence in pantomime. Yeah. Some of our favourite actors, so in 1861, H.J. Byron created the character of Widow Twankey in Aladdin, or the wonderful Scamp at the Strand Theatre, starring James Rogers as the widow. Interestingly, this was named after Twankey Tea, which was a less than premium brand of tea imported from China. I love that fact. Music hall star Lottie Collins, Tarara Boom Die was the show's story.
Tarara Boom Die. Everyone has to do that, don't
you? So that came from pantomime.
Ah, okay.
And that was in Dick Whittington in 1891. And then I've put a little picture in the show notes for Claire for this. One of the most famous Victorian animal impersonators was actor and acrobat Charles Lorry Jr., known as the Garrick of Animal Mimes. He developed his own menagerie, playing a puss from Puss in Boots and the pug dog in Babes in the Wood, along with various turns as a monkey, bear, wolf, ostrich and even a kangaroo.
Wow. I mean, why didn't they go there when they were producing the new film Cats? I mean,
I don't know.
He's an expert.
This costume is beautiful.
Amazing. So, thank you very much. Anything else on Panto?
I was just going to end with, by the end of the century, pantomime had reached epic proportions.
Epic.
The 1900 production of Sleeping Beauty and the Beast was one of the most lavish and successful pantomimes ever produced at Drury Lane Theatre, combining the story of Beauty and the Beast with Sleeping Beauty. It featured double the number of scenes and range of locations, with settings included the haunting vaults of the palace, a fairy parliament and the enchanted crystal garden. The grand finale was a transformation scene by set designer Bruce Sensation Smith, which represented Beauty's wedding gifts, as well as a grand staircase and numerous fountains.
Wow.
It got lavish in the Victorian times.
It did get lavish.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to see any pantomimes, you're inspired by that, we're going to give you a rundown of some of the pantomimes you can go and see in the region. But Ken's coming back. He's snuck back in the room again, so we're going to have to let him out.
Doesn't seem to matter what I do, I'm always number two. No one knows how hard I tried. I have feelings that I can't explain, driving me insane. All my life been so polite, but I'll sleep alone tonight. 'Cause I'm just kidding, anywhere else I'd be a ten. Is it my destiny to live and die a life of blood fragility?
FM. Welcome to award-winning care and luxurious living at Avery Collection at Brentwood Arches. We offer residential, nursing and dementia care delivered by highly trained and dedicated staff with spacious accommodation, light and airy apartments, expansive communal areas and gardens that allow residents to retain their independence in style. Join us for a look round and discover what life is like at Avery Collection at Brentwood Arches. Visit our website to find out more. Search for Avery Healthcare.
EV Charging Systems, your local, independent and experienced specialist home and workplace charge point suppliers and installers. With over 1,000 installations throughout Essex and East London and a 5-star excellent Trustpilot rating, we provide great personal service and are committed to help Essex drivers go green. Visit www.evchargingsystems.co.uk or call us on 01268 710 459. Install, charge and go with EV Charging Systems.
Need a will? Facing redundancy or an employment issue? Searching for some family legal advice? Seeking legal guidance for your commercial business? Or maybe you are moving property and are looking for an excellent conveyancer? Whatever the legal service, for life, business and everything in between, Pinny Telford Solicitors have it covered. Find out more online at www.pinnytalford.co.uk or call our Brentwood office on 01277 211 755 to book an appointment.
Your local hospice needs your support this festive season, and there are so many ways that you can make a difference. Purchase your Secret Santa and stocking filler gifts at any St. Francis Hospice store. Host a Jumpers or Jim Jams day at work, or support the Christmas Tree Recycling Service. The team at St. Francis Hospice will pick up and recycle your real Christmas tree for a donation with a brand new sponsor, the Sharp Group. So support your local hospice this Christmas.
Phoenix FM.